You're getting your Bibles, why don't you open to the book of Job? Sorry, I just want you to be able to see this. I know you might not be able to see it all that great. All right, is everybody in the book of Job? You're going to want to be close to the beginning. And we're going to basically just jump right into where we left off last week. For those of you who weren't there, I apologize. This is our third week now. First week we did an overview of the book, and last week we did the first two chapters, which sets the stage. Okay, so we have come to the conclusion during that big overview study that Job is often, most often we associate Job with what? What do you think?
Blameless.
Good. Suffering, blamelessness. Yeah. Do you have something, Kiana? Yeah, he had everything. Yeah, being tested, and all good things, and actually very important things, and definitely there in the book. But we kind of have come to the conclusion that it's not just about that. It is also, Job's suffering is a window, it is an avenue through which we get to see this conversation happen where really hard questions are asked about God, even to God. And some of those questions might be questions that you have. And we can apply that even to not necessarily the same questions that Job has or that these friends bring up, but also questions that are just hard. And what do we do when we don't have all the answers? And what chapters 1 and 2 really did, and last week, what it really did was establish one thing. If you got anything from last week, what I want you to remember is the main point that nothing came to Job, and thereby nothing comes to us outside of God's sovereign hand. Right, that is what was established last week. And we saw that in multiple ways. In one way, Job was the perfect candidate for this to happen because he was rich and he was righteous. And what do I mean by that? Imagine if God had chosen to afflict a really poor guy who lived on the streets in a cardboard box and stole from people all the time. Okay, so Satan comes and he afflicts this guy by taking away his cardboard box. Are all these hard questions going to start coming to us? Not so much, right? But if the most righteous person and the most wealthy person starts to suffer, it's like, okay, wait a second, what's going on here? This doesn't seem right. And so, in a sense, Job is the perfect candidate. God is in control of that. We also saw that God was in control because of how Satan and God interacted. You remember this, that God says this, never responds to Satan. It's always God speaks and Satan always responds. And in this situation, God brings Job up first. He allows Satan to do things, and he even restricts Satan from doing things, which should be a comfort to us, too, because sometimes we feel like God's allowing a lot in our lives, but we don't know what is he actually restricting. And in our trials and in our suffering, we don't know all that's going on. And finally, we saw that God was in control because of how Job responded, which was he affirmed God's goodness, even though he's the one who's suffering. He says, no, the Lord gave in the first place, and ultimately the Lord is taken away. And he has the right to do that. So that sets the stage because even though that's awesome, but we're so thankful for Job's response, it does leave us scratching our head then. I mean, from our perspective, we know what was going on, but definitely from Job's perspective, he's wondering what in the world is going on. Let me pray, and then we're gonna jump into these speeches, and I want you to be able to track with what goes on with Job and his friends, and hopefully we will know the book better by the end of the night and throughout the summer. So let's pray. Father, this is your holy word, and it's so important that we listen and that we know it. And Job and his friends are about to interact at a level that is so interesting and important for us, and we need to realize that we just don't always have all the answers, and you are the God only wise. You are the wise God. And I pray that we'd walk away tonight thinking about that when we hit suffering, when it comes time for us to comfort people, that we would realize that we just are not enough. We need you to help us with your wisdom. And for that end, I pray and bless our time tonight. In your son's name, amen. All right, so I'm going to make just straight up, the next few weeks, we're going over these cycles of Job's speeches. So what happens when Job goes through the suffering, what happens is his friends show up, and they start to talk to him, and they get in the dialogue, and they go back and forth. And there's this symmetry where Job speaks, and then a friend speaks, Job responds. Then a friend speaks, Job responds. Then a friend speaks, and it goes back and forth. And I'm going to argue, that's the huge part of the book that, like, we don't usually know, right? We know the end, beginning and the end, but we often miss this huge conversation that happens. And I'm going to say this. The main point of all that speech, all this discussion, is to bring you to the conclusion. I think one of the main things is that the wisdom of man fails. Okay? The wisdom of man fails. Last week, we left Job in misery. Why is he in misery? Shout some things out. Okay, his life is awful. He's got boils. And it's not just boils like, oh, I've got like a cold sore on my lip. It is, I have from head to toe these bulbous, pus-filled, nasty, have to scrape with some pottery, boils disease. Okay, he's misery. What else? Why else is he in misery? All his family is dead. Man, this guy is struggling. And his friends show up, and they come to him, and they sit, and Job is silent for 7 days and seven nights, and we're just thinking, what's going to go on with this guy? And if Job's response last week seemed difficult, you're like, man, if it happened to me, I don't know if I'd have the steadfastness and the strength to respond like Job did. This week, his humanity is revealed a little bit. He is human, and there are hard things that he has to deal with. Chapter 3, as we get into it, doesn't so much introduce Job's response and his argument. He just speaks out and he weeps and laments. Okay, and up here, what we're gonna do is we have Job and his three friends. And just so you know, this is artist representation. I don't have any reason for why I drew them that way, other than how I see their personalities in the text. I don't think Bildad had glasses. Okay, I don't know if he was short, but that's kind of just the way I picture him in my mind. Okay, so we're going to trace their arguments and their conversation throughout. Does that make sense? So if you're taking notes, a good thing you might want to do is just represent this. Okay, like draw your own pictures of what you think the friends look like, and then trace their arguments as we go through the book. And I'll make a note that the making application and trying to figure out a main point to these things can be a little difficult when we get to a section of poetry and back and forth, which is why I want you to keep at the main front of your brain that the wisdom of man fails. That's what we're trying to get at. And as we think about the fact that the wisdom of man fails, we're going to break up this first cycle of speeches where Job and all the friends respond. We're going to break it up into kind of three different categories. And the first is that Job's sorrow, okay, his sorrowful response reveals the reality that suffering can be very great. If you missed that last week, because it seems like his response is so inhuman. It's so like, I'm a Christian man and I don't have to weep because I know that God's in control. Chapter 3 is different. So look at chapter 3. Notice how he opens up. It says 3 verse 1, Job opened his mouth and cursed, not God, he didn't curse God, he cursed the day of his birth. And Job said, let the day perish on which I was born. Look ahead in chapter 3. Okay, look down at your Bibles, and you're going to see some question marks. What are some of the questions that Job asks? You raise your hand if you find one. Chapter 3. Yes, Jackson. Why did I not die at birth? Okay, why did I not die at birth? That's a pretty miserable question, right? Man, why didn't I die? Someone see another one? Yep.
Why were there knees to receive me and breasts that I might be nourished?
Yeah, it's a little bit embarrassing. Basically, he's saying, why was I born at the time I was born? Why was my mother allowed to go through with her birth? Okay, anybody see one more? Yep. Go ahead, Stephanie. It's all right. Yeah. What verse is that in?
23? No, 22.
Yeah, so that's actually the end of a first question where he says, why is light given to him in misery? Basically, why, when I'm trying to find the grave, why in the world does God let me see light? Because I kind of want to die, which is really a miserable question. Now, if you were to wrap that all up, Job's first speech in chapter 3, it's miserable and it's sad and it's and we should sympathize with him, is, why was I born? And this really just shows the reality of what he's going through. And it shows that suffering at times can come. You can expect it. It's part of a fallen world. And we know why Job was suffering because we have the background. But Job doesn't know. And he is now confronted with the fact that even though life was going so great, he's now suffering. And how does that relate to the idea of the wisdom of man fails? I want to open up with this. One day, if you haven't yet, one day you will come to a point where you feel like Job. And I hope it's not to this extent where it's so miserable and you actually ask the question like, man, why was I born? But one day you will feel sad. And why? You'll look at the earth and you'll see some things like on the news. You'll see some things at your school. You'll see some decisions that your friends make. A tragedy will happen and you will be confronted with suffering. And my question to you is, where will you go then? There is a temptation now because you're in high school and you're young and it's great. Maybe not for all of you, but some of you might feel that way. And I'm top of the world, that I am the kind of the captain of my own ship. Suffering has a way of revealing to you that life is a little bit harder than that. And my question is, where will you go? Because Job's friends are going to come and going to reveal that wisdom of man fails. And when you're asking the hard questions, are you going to trust yourself and what the world says? Are you going to trust what God says? And I want you to think about this now before you go into suffering so that you can be prepared, that you will look for answers and the place to go is not ultimately man, though they can be helpful and comforting. The place to go ultimately is God. And let me ask you this. At this point, if you were to see a guy sitting on the side of the road asking questions like this, it was your friend. You go outside, you see Hunter sitting on the side of the road, and he's got boils. He shaved his head. He's got boils on his head and on his feet, and he's just weeping. How should you feel for him?
Bad.
Yeah, really bad? What else?
You don't feel happy for him.
What'd you say?
You don't feel happy.
Yeah, you don't feel happy. But how about some positive things? What would you want to do? Yeah, take him to the hospital?
Give him money?
Yeah.
Jackson, I would keep driving.
No. Listen, this is interesting because it's gonna get us right into our next point, okay? So how should you feel for a guy like this?
Compassion.
Yeah, compassion. That's a good word. Compassion and kindness. And as we look at basically the same thing, you're right. As you look at this, that suffering is great, it should cause us to feel a compassion and a concern for a man like this. But Job's friends show up, and so we've seen that the suffering, the reality of suffering, can be very great. We need to wrestle with that and figure out where we're going to stand when we hit a trial. We're going to go to man, we're going to trust ourselves, we're going to trust God. And then his friends show up, and the second category we're going to look at, and this will take a little bit longer, is that the friends' insensitivity to Job reveal that they are careless and prideful. Yes?
Yeah,
in the sense of like what happened with God.
Yeah.
And no, they don't. But I'll show you why it's not just that their ignorance isn't enough to excuse the way they respond. Wait till you see what they do, okay? Let's introduce the friends real fast, all right? No, it's a great question. And we should actually, what we're gonna see is that sometimes we think we have assumptions about people and we start giving advice like these guys do. And that's not necessarily always the first and right response. And so I'll explain that. So these friends, who are they? We have Eliphaz, and he is a Temanite. We have Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite, something like that. And these guys, the best we can tell from their names is that they are from the land of Edom, which you might say, not a big deal. I don't know what that means. But in the book of Jeremiah, what's very interesting is that Jeremiah talks about the land of Edom, and by the time that Jeremiah speaks, which is further along down the road, he talks about Edom being this place of wisdom, and it had become known as a place of wisdom. And is that the case when this happened? I don't know. But it's interesting, because based on how they respond and how they talk and their creativity, these guys are really smart. They're not idiots. They actually have a level of wisdom that would be like top notch, and they get together to solve a problem. Let me put it this way. Imagine if some crazy world crisis or phenomena happened in the United States. I don't know, something like really crazy. Like we woke up one day and...
The sun didn't come up.
Yeah, the sun didn't come up. Good. That's a really good one. That's better than the one I thought of. The sun didn't come up. And like the news is like, what? The sun didn't come up today. Like, what are we going to do about this? And they're like, we need to gather a panel to discuss this. And so where would they go? Who are some like where are the... Yeah, MIT. Call the best professor from MIT. Where else?
NASA.
Let's get NASA in on here. Okay? The guy from CSUN. Okay? And they've got this conference call.
Ben Embry.
Okay, no, that's no. Okay, anyway, they have this conference call, they're all sitting on the news, and they're just like, yeah, I think it has to do with the gravity of the moon pulling something, and then they start trying to all these naturalistic responses. And there's one guy who's like, I don't know what I'm seeing, but I can't explain it naturally. And there's three guys like, no, you have to explain it naturally, because that's how they've been taught, right? They've been taught in school that everything happens because of just nature and that sort of thing. And they're going back and forth. It's kind of like this. He's got three friends who just can't get past this one idea. Do you remember what that one idea is? What's that? Okay, only sinful people suffer. And why is that a problem in this situation? Because Job did not sin.
And the whole situation contradicts that principle.
Yeah, the whole situation contradicts the principle that if you are righteous, you'll be blessed, and if you suffer, that's because you are a sinner. So that's the crisis, the world crisis that these guys come in on to try to solve. And Eliphaz shows up, and it would have been good and right for them to see Job, and like we said, respond in compassion. Respond in kindness, in sensitivity. But Eliphaz shows up and he speaks from... Oh, I was going to say, one thing that's remember about Job, we always say this, he's speaking from the lens of a sufferer, which when a sufferer speaks, is he always necessarily being realistic and right, or is there a lot of emotion in there, right? You understand what I'm saying?
Emotion.
Yeah, so when a sufferer speaks, a lot of times it's like there's despair mixed in and there's a struggle, and so not everything he says is necessarily going to be, yeah, should be taken with a grain of salt, right? It's like he says, why was I born? That's a really like big statement, and hopefully you would hope they get to a point where he's not saying that. So that is the attitude you have. Okay, this guy's a sufferer. I want to treat him like a sufferer. Unfortunately, Eliphaz comes in, and he starts arguing from his own experience. He says things, if you look at chapter 4, verse, let's see here. I just lost it. Chapter 5, verse 8. He says, as for me, okay? As for me, if it were me, okay, I would do this. And here we go, 4, verse 8. As I have seen. Now, what's the problem, though? Can Eliphaz really relate with Job's experience?
No.
Eliphaz is actually probably a rich, wise guy, just like Job was. He's a friend. And he starts coming and he's like, you know, if it were me, I would do this. And that's a little bit insensitive, okay? It's a little bit insensitive. And he comes in and he starts talking to him like that with experience. And here's the crux of his argument, what we said, 4 verse 7. He says, remember, who that was innocent ever perished? And he's going to kind of develop this and basically say, look, the really wicked people die. You're not dead. So there's hope. He's basically saying, hey, at least you ain't dead, you know? And that's, again, is that like sensitive or is that a little bit kind of stepping on his toes? Okay, it's stepping on his toes. And he says, chapter 5, verse 9, he says, verse 8, as for me, I would seek God. Okay, so he says, the righteous don't die. And that's not ultimately. Of course, he knows that eventually the righteous die, but they won't die because of their sin. Okay, the righteous don't die, and I would seek God. Now, what's the implication about I would seek God? It's that Job has not sought God, right? And we have to remember, we have to put this at the bottom right here. Remember, Job did not sin. Okay? We have to keep that in mind throughout all these arguments, because that has to be their answer. If their worldview is built on this idea that the righteous do not suffer and Job is suffering, then there has to be an answer for why he is going like this. And then he says in 5 verse 17, "Behold, blessed is the one whom God reproves. Therefore, despise not the discipline of the Almighty." Job, don't despise discipline. You're just being disciplined for now. Seek God. And the problem is, he did seek God. He's not being punished. He's not being disciplined. In fact, if anything, did God choose Job to suffer because he was wrong or because he was right?
Because he was right.
God chose Job because he was the perfect candidate. He was righteous and he had a lot of wealth. And so Eliphaz would be like, let's say you studied for a test really, really hard, and you put your best foot forward. Well, let's just say you did, all right? You put your best foot forward. It was going to be a hard test. You don't study in the past. You know, I got to get better. You study and study and study and study for a week. You're staying up till, 11 every night, trying to get good sleep, trying to listen in class. The test comes. You get a D, and you're feeling down. Oh, man. And this one guy comes who didn't study at all, people like this, and he aced it. And he comes up to you and is like, "Hey, what'd you get?" And you're like, "Oh, I got a D." And he goes, "Hey, study harder next time," and takes off. Would that, yeah. Is that a good response or a bad response? Yeah, it's crazy, right? And so Eliphaz is just like, "Hey, Job, at least you're not dead. There's still hope for you." And the thing, he is a little bit, it's not like he's an idiot. He is kind of. He's just very, very insensitive. And you see that in 5 verse 27. He says, "Behold, this we have searched out. It is true. Hear and know it for your good." Okay? Eliphaz thinks he's got it. Yeah.
So if Job was so righteous, why does he have such bad friends?
It's a good question. I don't know if I could answer that. And here's the thing. Job's friends get a really bad rap. I was talking with someone about this earlier. You have to remember, it's like this principle is what they're operating by. Even Job is struggling with this. That's why he has this big conversation. Job even thought this way, even though he did seek to follow God. That's why he's just so baffled. And you'll see his baffling. We'll talk about it later. So I don't think they're just horrible friends. They will be rebuked for how they responded to it. But it's not like they're just sinful idiots who show up and just say, "Hey, you're evil." And you'll see it actually develops over time. It gets worse and worse as their worldview kind of falls apart. But, yeah. Let me see. What verse do you see that in?
Sorry, it's in the chapter 4, verse like 1 or 2.
He says that you've instructed many, you've strengthened weak hands, and it doesn't necessarily say that he gave the same advice. But even if he did, Job.
Yeah, he's like, "Your wife helped the toddler understand the strength of your hands."
Yeah. Not necessarily, but I'll look into it, and I'll respond maybe in a different way later.
Yeah, because I remember he was saying, like, you've helped so many people that were in suffering, so but as soon as you suffer yourself, you get all down.
So that yeah. So, there's an implicit rebuke there. But again, so here's the thing. Even if Eliphaz's words do bear some truth, and you're going to see that they do bear truth, the idea here is they're still being insensitive, and they're looking past the fact that there could be more complexities to this. There could be more to this situation than meets the eye. They think they've got it nailed down. See what I'm saying? And that's insensitive, and it reveals a pride. Okay? So let's move on to Bildad, and you'll see it some more. And you'll see it develop as they go on. Bildad shows up. And you would hope that it would get better, but he starts off pretty bad. 8 verse 4. Actually, he starts off pretty good. 8:3 says, "Does God pervert justice?" Okay, is God just? God wouldn't do anything unjust. Is that a good question or a bad question?
Bad.
No.
It's a rhetorical question.
Yeah, but is it to try to defend God's justice, is that good or bad?
That's kind of bad because it's obvious.
Yeah, but okay. Well, all I'm saying is to try to say, "Hey, look, God is just," is a good thing. So Bildad does show up and say something. I can't keep taking all the questions. Okay, we got to get through it. You can ask questions afterwards, all right? Which is fine and great. But Bildad shows up and he says that, okay, does God pervert justice? Implicit answer, no. Good question. But then he says, 8 verse 4, if your children have sinned against him, he has delivered them into the hand of their transgression. He says, Job, look, if your children died, it's because they've sinned. And they got what they deserved. Good, right? Again, yeah, it's very insensitive. And the problem is, that's not true. It's not true. It's not true that his children died for the cause of their sin. And there could be cases where God might punish someone for sin, but you don't know. And they don't know. There are complexities. It'd be like if Roy broke his leg while playing soccer, and he came in and sat down, and I came up as the good youth director trying to counsel him. He came up and said, "Hey, Roy, I'm sorry you broke your leg. Hey, when are you gonna stop sinning? When are you gonna get right with God? Because that's a pretty bad break, and I wouldn't want it to happen again." It's not taking all the facts and talking. I don't know. I mean, unless I've been talking with Roy for a long time, I don't know what's necessarily going on in his life and what caused that break, whether it had to do with sin or not. What's interesting is that God can discipline, but it's not a one-and-done deal, that every time somebody goes in a bad situation, that's because they're experiencing punishment. We see this in John, okay? And Jesus deals with this. John, you don't have to turn there. I'll read it to you. Because very interesting, this worldview carries over into the New Testament. John chapter 9, verses 1 and 2. As he passed by, says Jesus, as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. He's a guy who's blind. And verse 2, and his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? So that they've still got this problem in their heads. He's blind. Either his parents sinned or he sinned, and that's why he's blind. And Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. Jesus had a purpose for him to be blind, just like God had a purpose for Job to suffer. John chapter 9, verses 1 and 2. So let's ramp it up a little bit. Let's say you're sitting in a small group, and somebody starts to share a struggle. They're having a hard time with their parents at home, and you look at them, and they're saying, I want to love my parents, I want to get along with them, but I'm struggling with it right now. Are you going to be the type of person who is willing to dive into those complexities and try to help them think through it? Or are you just going to stand back and just think that you have it all figured out? Oh, it must be because of such and such, because, you know, they're just really bad kids and their parents haven't raised them well, so that's why they're having problems. That's not necessarily a fair assumption. And we can do that without even realizing it. When somebody comes to us and starts sharing their struggles, just start, I'm going to solve it in my head right now. It's because this and this and this, and I'm going to tell the answer, and that's it. And that is, it can be a very dangerous place to be. And there's a time to stop and listen and wait and gather the facts and think about, how can I truly help this person? All right, and then Bildad's argument's very similar. Verse 5, if you will seek God and plead with the Almighty for mercy. So does this sound familiar? Just like Eliphaz, seek God, plead for mercy. Which, if somebody were to tell you that in general, I think you should seek God and I think you should plead for mercy from him. Is that good advice? Yes, very good advice. Right truth, but the wrong time, and I think the wrong assumptions. The reason he's saying that is not because, Job, it would be good for you to call out to God. It's Job, you've got to deal with your sin, and that's an unfair assumption. And he ends by saying in chapter 8, verse 20, behold, God will not reject a blameless man. God will not reject a blameless, man. Sorry if you can't read my writing, but basically, Job, get back to the point where you're blameless, all right? And more or less. And there are probably complexities in there. I'm just trying to help you get a framework for how to understand how these guys think. Zophar shows up. He's a little more, Bildad, if you want to look at his speech, he kind of uses like nature metaphors, kind of say that he's kind of like a scientist, so he likes to talk about nature and use that to explain things. Zophar shows up, and he's kind of a deep thinker. He's more philosophy, and theology and asking his own hard questions. And in chapter 11, verse 5 and 6, he comes up and he says, "Oh, that God would speak and open his lips to you," which is a good thing. If God could speak, I wish he would, and he'd talk to you, and that he would tell you the secrets of wisdom. So a good thing is, Zophar acknowledges that God is wise, But then, and he says, "For he is manifold in understanding." It's a good thing. God is wise. He's understanding. And then he says, "Know then that God exacts of you less than your guilt deserves." Job, you deserve worse. Job, you deserve worse. And what's interesting is he just said, God is so unsearchable and he's so wise, you can't even know what he's thinking. Now let me speak for him. He just says that God is wise, and then he tells him what God would do, which now he's speaking for God. And that's an even more slippery slope to be on, to start saying that this must be what God is doing to you. And again, it's not that you can look to the Word and see how God has revealed himself, but when you start making assumptions that are groundless, you're just, this is the way it has to be, so this is how it is, and you start speaking for God, it can be dangerous. So Zophar says, you deserve worse. And again, I want to highlight, in the grand scheme of Scripture and the Gospel, what do we all deserve?
Death.
Yeah, death and hell. So really, it's right, but in the case of this situation, that's not why Job's suffering. God did not come to him and afflict and allow him to be afflicted so that because he needs to suffer for his sins. Okay? It'd be like what Zophar is doing, it would be like you know how sometimes we get so let's say politics, you get so tied to like a certain worldview, Republic or Democrat, and you see these political campaign ads, and a comedian was talking about this, and they paint them in a very certain light. And this comedian was talking about this one political candidate, and he's like, this negative campaign ad comes out, and they're like, "This guy voted to tase 7-year-olds, which sounds awful, right? And he's like, "Well, they talked to him," and he's like, "I was talking about worst case scenario. Like, if we don't want to shoot the kid if he gets a gun, so we tase him instead, and it's safer." It's not like he's building his campaign on the fact that we want to tase 7-year-olds. And so, again, it's a true statement. He did say that. He voted to tase 7-year-olds, but that's not, his whole campaign's not about that. So far speaks right for God in the sense that, yes, we all deserve worse, but that's not what's going on here. And he has the exact same advice. Chapter 11, verse 14, he says that if iniquity is in your hand, put it far away. Put iniquity far away. I think I might have misquoted that. Let me see what it says. 11, verse 14. If iniquity is in your hand, put it far away. Okay, so basically, get rid of your sin. That's what needs to happen. And let's just think about just real quick application. Just like one day you will have an opportunity to suffer, and you need to realize that man's wisdom ultimately fails. You need to turn to God. One day you will also have an opportunity to comfort. And I would say there's probably many opportunities around you right now, sitting in this room, people going through struggles, and you have an opportunity to comfort. Will you trust your own experience? Will you be quick to say, "You know, if it were me, I'd do this," without first stopping and listening and thinking it through? Or, you know, the latest psychological study says, "And that's why you're depressed, and that's why this and that," you know? Or would you stop and be patient? And there is a place for advice, but there is also a place for timing and thinking and being sensitive and not prideful that you think you have all the answers. So Job's sorrow reveals that suffering is great. Where are you going to go to when you suffer? The friend's insensitivity shows that they are prideful. What are you going to do when you comfort? Are you going to go to your own wisdom? Are you going to realize that there could be more complexities, that you just don't have all the answers? And finally, their dialogue presents difficult questions, and this is kind of where we've been. Job has a character arc. You have a question? I'll get to you. Can I talk to you afterwards? Because we're running out of time. But Job has a character arc. He doesn't just say, "Why was I born?" every single chapter. "I'm suffering." They talk to him. "Hey, I'm suffering." It actually kind of develops and goes somewhere. So he starts with a lament in chapter 3, "Why was I born?" Then, as Eliphaz speaks, then he responds, and he starts to address and even question God. And if you look at chapter 7, you don't have to turn there, I'm just going to read them to you. 7, verse 19, he says to God, "How long will you not look away from me, nor leave me alone?" He feels like God is picking on him. But he begins to realize it's not just that he has these questions. In chapter 9, he's questioning, you know, why are you picking on me? And that's the paraphrase, and it doesn't actually say that. But why are you picking on me? And then he gets further in chapter, after Bildad talks in chapter 9, he begins to have this idea. In 9 verse 3, he says, if one wished to contend with him, that's God. So if one wanted to come to God and argue his case, one could not answer him once in 1,000 times. And begins to realize, whoa, the gap between me and God is huge. But I know I'm right. So, man, I have no hope. Between me and God, who's gonna help this fix itself? And what's very interesting, in chapter 9, verse 33, he says this, there is no arbiter between us. An arbiter is like an umpire or a judge, you say a mediator, somebody to come in, and he even uses this language, he says, who might lay his hands on us both. Job wants somebody to come and put their hand on God and their hand on Job and equal the playing field. Because right now, how can he answer God? God is too powerful. He's too great in wisdom. He has too much understanding. I have no arbiter. I have no mediator. So he's in despair. But then, as we come, after Zophar speaks, we come to the end of his Job's speeches of the first cycle, he gets a little more bold. In chapter 13, verse 3, he says, but I would speak to the Almighty, and I desire to argue my case. Okay? He wants to argue his case. Want to argue before God. And he recognizes, look at 13, verse 15, he says, though he slay me, and your translation might say, I will hope in him, it's actually a mistranslation. And it's fairly well agreed upon by most people. What he's saying is, if I contend with God, he's going to slay me, and I have no hope. It's kind of the opposite. He's actually saying, I'm going to die if I go before God, but look where I'm at anyway. I want to come, I need to talk to him. We need to figure this out, no matter the cost. So you see, it's a developing thing. He starts off very sorrowful, and then he begins to think, I need to talk to God. I need to get this solved. At the same time, he's responding to his friends. And is there something going on? Are we all right back there? All right, yeah, it's all right. Anyway, if you could just try to keep it down. At the same time, he's also responding to his friends, okay? Not just talking to God. And he wants to highlight chapter 6, verse 26. He says that he's a despairing man. He's like, do you think that you can reprove with words when the speech of a despairing man is wind? He's just acknowledging, look, I'm in despair. He even acknowledges, we talk about how speaking falsely for God. He acknowledges chapter 13, verse 7, will you speak falsely for God? So he's kind of even pushing back against his friends. And he's even a little bit sarcastic. Chapter 12, verse 2, he says, no doubt you are the people and wisdom will die with you. You guys are the wise guys. You're going to die and, you know, whatever. So how does this comfort seem to be working? Good or bad? Is Job getting comforted?
No.
Is the problem getting solved?
No.
Okay, the wisdom of man fails. And along the way, these huge questions get asked. I've highlighted them before. How can a man be in the right before God? Job asks that. Does the Almighty pervert justice? Bildad asks that. Job says, what is man that you make so much of him? Job asks that. Job asks the rest of these. Why do you not pardon my transgression? Not just the question, but just some assumptions. There's no arbiter. There's no one to mediate between me and God. He even asks, how many are my iniquities and my sins? And then he ends with a very interesting metaphor. The cycle ends with this. He begins to say, hey, look, if a tree dies, somebody chops down a tree, it's a stump, there's actually hope for that tree. It can grow back. If there's water, it can grow stems again, and there's a hope for it to flourish. But if a man dies, he has no hope. Look at chapter 13. He imagines this situation. In chapter 14, verse 13, he imagines the situation. He says, oh, that you would hide me in Sheol. That's, oh, that I would die. That you would conceal me until your wrath be past. So he says, oh, that. What if there was a way that I could die? Your wrath would pass over me. And then he says that you would appoint me a set time and remember me. What if there was a way for Job? that he could die, God's wrath could pass over, and then he could come back and be right with God. And that's when he says, if a man dies, shall he live again? And this is actually hopelessness from Job. He doesn't believe it can happen. If a man dies, can he live again? The answer is no. And that's what he says, you destroy the hope of man. Job is in despair. And that might be a part of the book of Job that you don't see a lot. Job is really struggling, and he imagines these things, and he asks that question, if a man dies, shall he live again? And I want to take that and go into this last kind of application. I want you to realize that it is okay to have questions. It's okay to ask these really hard things in this dialogue. But we can be really thankful that Job went through this for us and that he asked these questions, because we're going to see by the end of the book that God is so wise. He knows what he's doing. And where are you going to go when the questions come? And I would say when these hard questions come, it's so beautiful because we have the gospel. When Job asks a question like, but how can a man be in the right before God? He doesn't know about Jesus. He doesn't know about how God's going to work in life. And so God set the situation up to ask a really hard question that he's going to answer with the Bible. That he's going to answer with Jesus. And I want you, when you read the gospel, to realize, man, Job had these questions. And he was wondering, what in the world was God doing? And God was going to answer them. And that's so awesome, and it's so beautiful. When he says, how can a man be in the right before God? The answer is that Jesus came and made a way for it to happen. The answer is that Christ died. God does have to punish sin, and he could have punished Job's sin, but instead, he made a way through Christ. Does the Almighty pervert justice? Is God unjust? No, he's not. He justly punishes sin, but he also justly forgives by taking your sin and putting it on Christ and forgiving you. And even a question like, what is man that you make so much of him? Job's asking, why do you pick on me? The gospel makes us realize that the best thing that God could do is not turn away and forget about us. The best thing that God could do is get involved. And he does. And he did through Jesus. And then Job said, there's no mediator, no one to put the hand on God, no one to put the hand on man. Yes, there is Christ, who is both God and man, who is the mediator between God and man, who came, lived the perfect life, and died for us. The gospel answers these questions. And Job asked them all thousands of years ago, wondering, God, what are you doing? And God, all along, was planning on answering them. Okay? It's beautiful. So beautiful. So, wrapping it all up, we looked at suffering. You're going to suffer some at some point. We see that man's wisdom clearly fails. Got to go to God. You're going to have a chance to comfort sometime. You're going to be prideful and assume that you have all the answers. Oh, if it were me, I'd do this. Are you going to be patient and think about, God, what could you be doing in this that I don't know about? Help me to see that. And maybe I don't have all the answers. And then important questions are asked. The gospel answers them. So beautiful, right? In small groups, what time is it? Okay, no small groups. Those are the big questions I want you to walk away with. Man, the wisdom of man fails. I'm going to keep seeing it, and it's going to come out in bigger ways than just in this. And I just really hope it encourages you to go to God and to think about what the scriptures said. Let me pray. God, thank you for this passage. You've been good to us to help us understand this. And I hope that the flow is able to be seen. Lord, we are really prone to think like the friends. And it's not that they had horrible motivations. It's not that they even had everything wrong. But they weren't careful, and they thought they knew it all. They thought that they had wisdom and that they could explain what Job was going through based on their own reasoning. And we do that so often. I just pray you'd humble us and help us to realize that we don't always know what's going on. There may be answers, and we should search for them in your word and to search for them in the gospel, because there are answers to some of our hardest questions, and we praise you. You saved us through Christ. If there's anybody here who's never turned to Christ, pray that they would realize that you've made a way for them to be right with you. And as we walk away from here, help us to be good comforters when our friends struggle. Help us to be good sufferers when we hit trials. And may we ask questions correctly. It's in your son's name I pray. Amen.